is their senior officer, who regretfully is no longer with us. "And that's why I'm here, Commodore," Alex replied. "You've already misunderstood the conditions at FYM-552. The senior commander during the conflict wasn't Admiral Tripping. It was Admiral Tachenko."
"Then under those conditions, Mr. Racine, the board would accept Admiral Tachenko's testimony."
"And I'm her senior," Alex replied with a smile. There were several asides between the Commodore and the captains, who sat to the presiding officer's left and right.
"It's our understanding, Mr. Racine, that you hold no naval rank, isn't that correct?" Jacobson asked.
"Essentially, I'm the fleet's ultimate authority, sirs, especially as it relates to these captains who operated in concert with my Trident squadron."
"Please clarify that statement, sir," the senior officer said.
"The OS Tridents are owned by Omnia Ships. The stipends of officers and crew are paid by Omnia Ships, and I'm the majority shareholder of Omnia Ships."
"Are you asking us to believe that you've raised and are operating a private navy?" a board captain asked.
"I'm not asking you, sir. I'm telling you what's true."
At that moment, the doors of the Board of Inquiry opened. Harold Grumley and Maria Gonzalez walked through, approached the front spectator row, and took seats. Two of the president's staffers had saved seats for them in a gallery otherwise packed with family members, supporters, detractors, reporters, and naval officers.
"President Grumley, the board appreciates your attendance, but hopes that you recognize that you have no official capacity during this inquiry," Jacobson said.
"I do, Commodore," Harold replied.
"However, your timing is most apropos, Mr. President," Jacobson said. "Would you please clarify for the board the circumstances under which New Terra has entered into the agreement to build Tridents?"
"Certainly, Commodore," Harold replied. "The accord was signed with Omnia Ships, specifically with Alex Racine."
"Not with the Omnian government?" a captain asked.
Maria stood to be recognized.
"Envoy Maria Gonzalez, the board would welcome any clarifications you might offer," Jacobson said, a frown marking his forehead.
"Alex Racine owns the majority shares in Omnia Ships," Maria replied. "The faux shell that is used to build Omnian ships and our tridents was invented by his people and donated to him. Mr. Racine has assembled an incredible group of humans, saids, and physical assets. New Terra is benefiting from his generous sharing of technology that just might prove to be what saves humankind from the advance of the Nual."
"Thank you for that clarification, Envoy Gonzalez, as incredible as it sounds," Jacobson intoned, unnerved to have learned that his government was contracting with a private company for the vaunted warship technology. Jacobson conferred with his other board members until four heads were nodding in agreement.
"Mr. Racine, the board recognizes your right to speak as the captain's superior. Sergeant, a chair for Mr. Racine," Jacobson ordered.
"Here you are, sir," a female sergeant said. She had Tatia's build and smoothly hauled a comfortable chair for him, unlike the ones the Trident captains sat on. Alex accepted the chair and returned the sergeant's generous smile with one of his own. Jacobson began with Alphonse and requested his recall of the events. Alex listened intently to the recitation. In his implants were the key points of the encounter, compiled by Julian. Each point was detailed with coordinates, time, individuals, and linked to the relevant communications. For the most part, Alphonse's recall was fairly accurate. When it was Bart's turn, he missed a few important details, but managed to deliver a solid account of the events. At the end of their stories, each captain announced his regret in not following the Admiral's lead, believing if he had, he might have changed the outcome and saved the Jeffrey Orlan. The board's Commodore and captains questioned the details of the stories for 2 hours.
"It's a shame the board doesn't have the account from Tripping's ship,"
Tatia lamented privately to Julian. Then again, they wouldn't have a full record of his ship's final moments anyway, not with the man cutting off comms with the flagship.
It does seem rather foolish not to make use of technology which they possess, Julian replied.
They merely have to request our records of the event, much more detailed than human recollection, excepting yours, of course, Admiral.
Tatia smirked at Julian, who smiled benevolently at her, as if he had only dared speak the truth.
"Mr. Racine, do you have anything you would like to add to clarify these accounts?" Jacobson asked.
"Please don't play that holovid," Harold whispered so quietly that only Maria heard him.
Alex stood and said, "These are two fine captains who made the right judgment that day, despite their survivor guilt. If they had followed Admiral Tripping, New Terra would have lost two more captains, two more crews, and two more warships."
"This is your opinion, Mr. Racine?" a board captain asked.
"Negative, sir. I have produced detailed telemetry of the event for President Grumley and Envoy Gonzalez. For reasons of my own, I prefer not to share the information with this board, but those two individuals will attest to what they witnessed in my presentation. The Nual Sphere drove at a portion of our squadron and deliberately self-detonated to take as much of the fleet with it as it could. The Admiral's ship was in the direct path of that explosion. These two captains reversed course and saved their people."
"Mr. Racine, that doesn't answer the fundamental question of why Captains Jagelski and Philister chose not to follow their admiral," Jacobson said.
"And that's why I stand before this board, Commodore. What the captains haven't told you is that I ordered Captains Jagelski and Philister to abandon the attack and reverse course at all speed."
"And why would you do that?" a board captain asked.
"Three ships had a better chance of defeating the sphere than one. These men couldn't have known the sphere would self-destruct."
"I knew," Alex said quietly, but with a voice that carried clearly throughout the room. It created a buzz throughout the audience, which required Jacobson to call for order, or he would clear the room.
"How could you know, Mr. Racine?" Jacobson asked.
"Analysis of information gleaned during the past 2+ decades, sirs," Alex replied. "While you enjoyed a period of peace, others of us fought the first Nual Sphere. While you slept, we built warships. While you wondered about what lay beyond your star, we visited there, discovered intelligent life, and the presence of a massive enemy. And while you traded for our technology, we hunted a second sphere for nearly a year. After a while, you come to understand your enemy, sirs, maybe better than you know yourself. The Nual will sacrifice themselves for their society. That's how their civilization has achieved its age and expanse. You do well to mark my words. If you don't seek them out, then one day they'll come for you." Rather than sit down, Alex spun and marched out of the room, his people flowing in his wake.
Chapter 25. The Dream. Following the NT captain's testimonies, the board reviewed their Trident's controller records. 3 days later, their findings were announced. No charges were preferred against Captains Jagelski and Philister, but the board recommended they be removed from their command positions. It was obvious to the two men that their naval careers had been truncated. They would serve out their enlistment terms in administrative positions, and then more than likely quietly retire.
"All that training time wasted," Tatia grumbled to Alex when they heard the pronouncements.
"Who says?" Alex asked.
"Well, New Terra has 2 Tridents to add to the 2 they have in trials, and no experienced battle captains to command either one of the 4, Tatia replied. "From what I hear, they're planning to jump fighter captains into these positions."
"You mean like we did?" Alex asked, grinning at Tatia.
"Yes, we did, and look how long we spent training them. Could we have that much time to do it all over again, dear leader?" Tatia asked, her voice sweet and encouraging.
Cute, Alex commented. I don't know how long we have, but the sooner we seek out the Nual, the less time they'll have to find us. But returning to the subject at hand, I'm not interested in what New Terra does with its tridents. Those are ships, and we're going to have plenty of them. What we need, my dear Admiral, are trained individuals, Alex said.
Oh, I love the way you think, Alex, Tatia said, grinning broadly at him.
When and where?
No time like the present. I think we should invite Alphonse and Bart to a meeting at Government House.
Excellent, Tatia replied, sending a signal to Julian, the twins, and Franz. Soon the group was planet-bound, with Franz at the helm of their traveler. Franz eyed his landing coordinates, checked his telemetry, and refrained from asking for clarification. Julian had supplied the data. He mentally shrugged and dropped through the clouds to descend over a suburban area. The coordinates pinpointed the middle of a road in front of a modest house, and Franz set the fighter down, impeding traffic. Before the traveler's hatch opened, Alphonse, his wife, and son came out of the house. When the hatch dropped, Tatia decided not to descend and start a prolonged conversation. Instead, she yelled from the hatch opening, "Captain, you're late for a meeting. Get a move on." Alphonse hurriedly kissed his wife while his son ran inside and grabbed his father's uniform jacket. Alphonse hugged his son, grabbed his jacket, and ran to the traveler.
"Apologies, Admiral, I didn't receive your message," Alphonse said as he gained the fighter's deck.
"My comm account might have been restricted."
"Hardly, Captain. You can't miss a message that was never sent. Take a seat, please."
When Alex indicated a seat beside Julian, Alphonse sat down and greeted each of them. He waited for an explanation, but the Sade and human quietly ignored him. Tatia decided to stay at the hatch for the next stop, which Franz indicated was nearby. Instead of a house, Franz discovered his coordinates placed him at the third-floor level of an upscale apartment building. When the hatch opened, it caught Tatia by surprise. She was looking across 10 meters of space to a balcony.
"A little warning next time, group leader," Tatia admonished via implant.
"Apologies, Admiral, this type of pickup isn't in my training experience," Franz sent in reply. Although Franz sounded sincere, Tatia was sure that he was laughing. The apartment's balcony door slid open, and Bart poked his head out.
"Admiral?" he queried.
"Get dressed, Bart. You have a meeting to attend at Government House. Downstairs, quick time." Franz landed, and soon Bart came running out of the apartment, shrugging into his jacket. As Franz lifted, he could see the astonished faces of pedestrians and hover car drivers as they watched his traveler lift. Only the more adventuresome grav car riders had dared overfly his ship while it was parked on the roadway. Most took an alternate route.
"What's up, Admiral?" Bart asked as his feet hit the traveler's deck.
"Patience, Captain," Tatia replied. "Take a seat."
"Julian?" "Grumly," Alex sent.
"I'm informed the President is in residence but is occupied at the moment," Julian replied after checking on Harold's status.
"Inform the President's Chief of Staff that we are inbound and wish some of the man's time," Alex sent. There was no vocal conversation during the flight to Government House. Alphonse and Bart exchanged glances of query, but neither seemed to have an idea as to what was happening. Once again, Franz landed at Government House. The Omnians and New Terran captains were met on the front steps by the President's Chief of Staff.
"Mr. Racine, the President begs your indulgence," the Chief of Staff said by way of a greeting.
"He's anticipated the reason you're here and informs me that he'll be with you shortly. If you care to wait in the first floor's main conference room, sir?"
Alex and the others waited quietly for a half hour before Harold hurried through the door.
"Apologies, Alex, friends, but let me announce my news before we begin.
I've this very moment concluded successful negotiations to appoint a person to a new cabinet post, the Minister of Defense.
I can't wait to hear what simpleton took this position, Tatia complained to Alex.
Put on a happy face, Tatia. We need to work with whoever has been appointed, Alex replied.
Harold briefly touched his ear comm.
Ha! I'm pleased to present my new Minister of Defense, Harold said with a sweep of his arm, as Maria Gonzalez walked through the door.
Into the dark together, my friends, Maria replied, a huge grin on her face.
Yes, Tatia exclaimed, clapping her hands together and rushing to congratulate Maria.
After Tatia, Alex folded Maria in his arms, the two of them holding on to each other.
And there's no better compliment than that, Maria whispered in Alex's ear before she released him.
Julian hugged Maria, and then he turned to Harold and said,
Mr. President, may I congratulate you on the wisdom of your choice?
I'm learning, Julian, Harold admitted.
Maria glanced at Alain, who stood near her. His head was bent and a hand on his heart. Across the room, Etienne held the same position. Maria straightened and solemnly bowed.
Escorts, you honor me, she said before lifting her head, pleased to see the grins on the creche-mates' faces.
Well, everyone take a seat, Harold said, beaming. I'm pleased to see you approve of my choice for the new ministerial post.
He couldn't have been happier. From what appeared to be a politically unwinnable set of circumstances, he'd managed to solve multiple problems with a single solution.
Alex, before we talk, I'd prefer to address the captains, Maria said. It wasn't necessary to ask Alex's permission to speak to her own people, but that was her style. For her efforts, she received a gracious nod from Alex.
Captains, Maria said, and Alphonse and Bart jumped to attention.
I have a question to address to each of you regarding your fitness to serve.
Yes, Minister, the captains chorused.
I'm concerned about the difference between your views of the final events at FYM 552 and those of the Omnians. And I should tell you, I trust their opinions far more than the two of yours. My question to each of you is this. Did you or didn't you do right by your crews? Philister, I'll start with you.
I saved my crew and ship, Minister Gonzalez, and I don't regret that. I don't understand why Admiral Tripping put us in that untenable situation, but it made me realize one thing. While I love these ships, the Tridents, I'm not cut out to be a war captain.
Admiral Tachenko, how would you rate Captain Philister?
Superior, Tatia replied, staring quietly at Bart, who nodded his acceptance of the compliment.
Hmm, replied Maria, taking time to consider Tatia's answer. Then her eyes speared Captain Jigalski.
It occurred to Alphonse that the minister's civilian clothes were a disguise. Underneath them she was entirely an ex-TSF general.
Let's try the same question on you, Captain Jigalski, Maria said.
Permission to speak plainly, Minister, Alphonse replied.
Among this group, Maria replied, sweeping her arm around the room, that will always be the case.
The appointment of Admiral Tripping was a terrible mistake. He wasn't qualified on a trident, and he wasn't qualified to command a warship squadron. If I had the choice of serving under his kind again or jockeying a desk, please point out my admin chair.
Well, Captain, I can set your mind at ease on that point, Harold interjected. The Omnians have made it clear that in the future any of our naval officers who sail with them and are to hold a rank higher than Captain must meet their approval.
Most appropriate, Alex, Admiral, Alphonse replied, and Bart tipped his head twice to add his approval.
Continue, Captain Jigalski, Maria ordered.
Do I regret not following Admiral Tripping?
No, not really. I lament the loss of the new Terrans, many of them friends who were aboard his ship. I keep wondering what I could have done differently.
"'That's the terrible price of command, Captain,' Maria replied. "'If you had the opportunity to sail with the Omnians again, would you take it?' Alphonse looked hopefully at Tati and Alex, but he couldn't read anything in their expressions, neither encouragement nor dismissal. "'If they allowed it, I'd serve,' Alphonse said firmly. "'And whose orders would you ultimately follow, Captain?' Maria asked. "'Those would be the orders of my squadron commander, as long as they didn't contradict the fleet's Omnian commander,' Alphonse replied. Maria glanced at Alex, who said, "'An acceptable answer.' "'Captains,' Maria said, "'I have the authority to ignore the board's recommendations that you be removed from command and given administrative positions. Those who haven't been in a fight have no idea what it takes to survive one. Captain Philister, I appreciate your honest appraisal. How would you feel about training newly appointed Trident captains?' "'Could you be more specific, Minister?' Bart requested. "'At this time, we're turning a trident out every 3 to 4 months. I need someone to bring new captains quickly up to speed on these ships and teach them basic squadron maneuvers in the Omnian style. That includes command methodology, SAID communications, ship controllers, and all. "'I'm your man, Minister,' Bart exclaimed. "'I appreciate the offer, Captain, but you're a little young for me,' Maria quipped, smiling. Bart blushed and attempted to stammer a response, but Maria held up a hand to forestall him. "'With what the Omnians are discovering, the future promises to be a hard road,' Maria added. "'Don't lose your sense of humor, Captain.' "'Yes, ma'am,' Bart replied, returning Maria's smile. "'And as for you, Captain Jagielski, I'm returning you to duty as the captain of the Arthur McMorris. That ship, for its namesake, needs the best we have to offer.' "'Thank you, Minister,' Alphonse replied, his shoulders straightening. "'Don't thank me yet, Captain,' Maria replied. "'You're going to be a busy man. You have 2 weeks to evaluate the group of potential captain appointees with Captain Philister,' and send me your recommendations for the 3 available tridents. 2 weeks, yes, ma'am, Alphonse affirmed. When those captains are in place, you'll be promoted to senior captain, which the Omnians have already approved, Maria said. Alphonse looked across the table at Alex and Tatia. They were grinning now, and he couldn't help the smile that spread across his face. "'Now mind what I say, Captains. Vet these people carefully. We're not looking for people who are good at sailing ships around the system and keeping their crews happy. We're looking for individuals who aren't afraid to join the fight that the Omnians tell us is coming. Understand me?' "'Yes, Minister,' Alphonse and Bart replied. "'Your orders will be in your readers this afternoon. One last item, Captains.' New Terra's Trident Defense Force is a new entity that reports to me. It's separate from all existing naval operations. Dismissed, Maria said. When the captains left the room, the leaders regarded one another. A long road, Tatia said, echoing Maria's words. Alex asked Svetlana to apologize to the crew, but he needed some time with Maria Gonzalez, now that she'd been appointed Minister of Defense. "'Excellent decision. There's hope for New Terra yet, Alex,' Svetlana had sent in reply when she heard the news. Alex and Renee, along with others, were hosted at Maria's home. "'You can walk in the forest again, Renee,' Maria said when Alex and his people arrived. That nest of biters is gone. Gone where? Renee asked with concern. Permanently gone, Maria replied, laughing and throwing an arm around the slender Omnian, who she considered a daughter, as they walked into the house. After an exceptional midday meal on which every human complimented Maria, she said, Now I know this group, with your capabilities, has detected Oliver in my house, but I have a surprise for you. Julian, would you request Oliver's presence? Oliver joined the group at the table, and Alex took note of where the sage stood.
It was close to Maria, perhaps a little protective of her. While Oliver and I worked together, we grew attached to each other. When his contract with our government ended, he was loath to return to the Confederation, and I was sorry to see him leave. So we struck a bargain, Maria explained. I have this domicile, Oliver said, indicating the house with a wave of his arm. A place from which to work, and the company of a friend. Are you happy? Alex asked, testing Oliver's progress. There was the slightest of pauses before Oliver replied, I am content, sir. A good place to be, Julian commented. Oliver, my guests were raving about the food. I thought you would like to know, Maria said. You cook the food, Oliver? Renee asked. In a manner of speaking, sir. Maria obtained a set of dispensers, food stocks, and recipes for me from Harrigan. However, I've been experimenting with native materials and creating new recipes. Harrigan-style dispensers have established a foothold in the food industry here, Maria explained. But what's propelling much of the new explosion is Oliver's recipe books. He's become extremely popular and is earning a substantial number of credits from sales, Maria said proudly. Is that what you want to be, Oliver, a chef? It's an interesting pastime, sir. However, my priorities will now shift to supporting the minister in her new duties. That's what will make me more content, Oliver replied, directing his gaze toward Alex. Julian, commercial opportunity, the recipes and food stock, Alex sent. Negotiations are underway, Alex, Julian replied. I believe that Trixie would appreciate signing these contracts to support Omnia's development. That makes me think, Julian. When these new Terran forces descend on Omnia, we will need accommodations and supplies on planet, especially food recipes that remind them of home, Julian finished for Alex. Well said, but you need to hand this off to someone else to manage, Julian. Agreed. Julian sent in reply. Renee gazed at her hands. They were powerful. She held them away from her and saw her arms bulged with muscles. She was bewildered, but not frightened. It was the familiarity of the limbs that prevented her fear, which might have awakened her from the dream. The realization intruded that what she was observing were Alex's arms and hands, and she chuckled. I'm huge, she thought. There was no sense of place, which confused Renee. She swiveled her head and saw nothing but emptiness. I'm floating in space, she thought. Tiny distant lights appeared. The more she stared at them, the more she saw. Thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. The harder she looked, the more lights appeared. In this enormous span of space, the lights blinked. They didn't blink as one, but individually. Each light pulsed with regularity, but with an odd rhythm that didn't resemble the twinkling of a star. That's when Renee felt her body move, slowly at first, then faster and faster. She sped through the blackness, the lights streaming past her in a blur. Then Renee abruptly stopped. There was no sense of deceleration. One moment the distances between the blinking lights were crossed in mere ticks of time as she zipped through the dark, and the next moment she floated in space again with no forward direction. But something had changed. The tiny lights were to her left, right, above, below, and behind her, but they weren't in front of her. Everywhere that Renee looked, the lights continued their incessant beating. But forward of her was pure blackness, no lights, nothing. She felt a sense of foreboding, anticipating that in front of her was an abyss that endangered her, or that it was the deep dark that had sought her out. An intense desire for preservation intruded on Renee's subconscious, and she was shocked awake. Sitting up in bed, she gazed at Alex, whose eyes and limbs were twitching.
Her anxiety subsided, replaced with sympathy. She realized her dream was that of her partner. It was a consequence of the frequent and intimate bonding of their implants.
"Well, my love, if I must endure your dark dreams to enjoy what we have in bed, then it's well worth it," Renee thought.
She reached over and gently shook Alex until he mumbled, "Are you okay?"
"I'm fine, my love, or I was until I shared your dream," Renee replied.
Alex groaned. "Apologies," he said. Renee laughed softly and leaned over to kiss his cheek, letting her lips linger.
"Well, if nothing else, my love, yours are so much more interesting than mine."
"Should I ask?" Alex inquired.
It fascinated both of them that Alex's implants didn't record what his subconscious created, and Renee's didn't record what she received, even though the only way the dreams were transmitted was via an implant-to-implant connection. To add to the mystery, no one else received Alex's broadcasts, despite the intensity of some of his dreams.
"It was an odd one," Renee explained, sitting up. "I was you, in your body, I mean."
"Massive weight gain," Alex mumbled.
"Hush," Renee replied, lightly thwacking his arm with her fingers.
"We were floating in space with stars all around us, except they weren't like regular stars."
"Why not?"
"Well, they didn't twinkle. They pulsed with these strange rhythms."
"All in sync?"
"No, each light had its own rhythm."
"Hmm," Alex grunted.
"Then we started speeding past the lights."
"Lights or stars?" Alex asked.
"How do I know? It wasn't my dream," Renee replied tartly.
"True. Go ahead."
"Anyway, we sped through the dark, the lights flashing past us. I got the feeling that we crossed a huge distance of space, and then all of a sudden we came to a stop. And here's where it got strange.
You were in my body, floating in space and surrounded by oddly pulsing stars, and that isn't weird?" Alex asked.
"You'll pay later for interrupting my story, sir," Renee warned.
"Apologies, my delectable partner. Please continue," Alex replied in a conciliatory manner, while working to maintain a straight face.
"After speeding through the dark, we stopped, instantly stopped," Renee continued. "The lights were around much of us, but not in front. It was like we were embedded in the middle of a vast wall. Beside and behind us were lights, but in front of us, nothing. The universe was divided into lights and no lights. The dark that was ahead of me scared me so much that I woke up."
"Apologies again, my love," Alex said, pulling Renee to him. He hated that he wasn't in control of this aspect of his implants, worse, that it impinged on Renee's sleep.
"Listen to me, Alex," Renee said, pushing away and taking Alex's face in her hands. "There was something different about this dream. Normally they're a chaotic collection of imagery, which I can usually ignore, but this one was clear. Most important, it was coherent. It told a story."
Renee's eyes intently held Alex's. He might have dismissed her tale of the dream, except that she wasn't willing to take it so lightly.
"A regular or rhythmic pulsing?" Alex repeated.
"Yes," Renee replied, pleased that Alex was focusing on the dream.
"And we came to a place where space was separated into pulsing and non-pulsing stars."
"Lights," Renee corrected, but it didn't appear that Alex heard her.
She heard him groan, a deep, strong sound that was usually reserved for a self-deprecating moment when someone realizes his stupidity. Before Renee could ask, Alex grabbed her face with both hands and kissed her, deep and warm. He leapt out of bed and ran toward the bedroom's door.
"Clothes, my love," Renee yelled out in time.
"Julian, front porch, if you please," Alex sent while he quickly dressed.
Julian politely ended his conversation with Oliver, sending, "Excuse me, Oliver, Alex requires some conversation."
"At this hour?" Oliver asked.
"Something has disturbed his sleep," Julian replied.
"I'm curious to learn more, Julian. May I join you?"
The request gave Julian a moment of pause. He didn't want to disturb the camaraderie of his late-night conversations with Alex, but he considered the request from his friend's perspective. Alex would be generous.
"We'll meet on the porch, Oliver," Julian sent.
As Alex came through the front door, he saw both Sades and glanced quickly at Julian.
"Oliver requested the opportunity to listen, Alex," Julian said privately.
"Welcome, Oliver," Alex said. "You may observe, but this conversation will take place solely between Julian and me, unless you're invited."
"Understood, Alex," Oliver replied. "Thank you for allowing me to witness the exchange."
"One other point, Oliver. This data is to be permanently secured. Only you may ever have access to it."
"Also understood, sir," Oliver replied,
setting the parameters on the data folder where the conversation would be stored. Alex leaned back in a comfortable porch chair and stared out at the night. He'd always enjoyed the woods, the sights, the smells, and the animals. They were such a contrast to space, where he'd spent most of his life. When he was ready, he recited the dream sequence to Julian as Renee related it to him. Oliver was transfixed by the idea that Alex could dream, and Renee could receive the dream. This was an aspect of human implant exchange that he couldn't have imagined, and that fascinated him.
"I find the aspect of rhythmic pulsing a key indicator," Julian said when Alex finished.
"Me too. I'm thinking probes," Alex replied.
"That was my thought," Julian replied.
"It seems your subconscious is indicating that we should map the probe signals that we've discovered over the star positions. Then we could add the vectors of the sphere's travels. This plotting might indicate the path of the Newall expansion. There is the possibility that we come up with blank areas. In those areas, the probes might be too faint to read or were destroyed by natural accidents. Then again, maybe the Newall chose not to expand in those particular directions," Alex postulated.
"I would think those options would have limited probabilities based on the data we've collected so far," Julian replied.
So you've not considered the idea that there are races out there that the Newall fear, or a group of intelligent species who are cooperating and destroying probes as they enter their territories. All these would be ancient races that would have been in conflict with the Newall before humankind walked upright." Julian focused on Alex while he reordered several indices, expanding the possibilities, as Alex had suggested. He had dwelt on the data surrounding the Newall, building schema about the species, their technology, their habits, and their probable actions. What he hadn't done was step back and imagine the universe that the Newall inhabited, and postulate who else might be out there. "My question, Julian, is, do we have sufficient sophisticated and powerful enough telemetry capabilities in our warships to map that far out in front of us, to detect the probes to the degree we've been discussing?"
"No, Alex, we would need the help of..."
"Willem," Alex and Julian said simultaneously, and laughed. "But is he out and about aboard the Sojourn?" Alex asked.
"I will inquire into his location," Julian replied. "If he is journeying aboard the Explorer ship, we can visit the observatory and inquire of the senior astronomer."
"Who has the post?" Alex asked.
"A Sade by the name of Jupiter."
"Jupiter, as in the name of the colorful planet orbiting Sol?"
"The same, Alex.
When Theodosius discovered Trixie dropped her original ID of Lenora to adopt a new name, he decided to do likewise."
"Jupiter. Good choice," Alex replied, grinning.
"Herrikan first or Omnia, Alex?" Julian asked. "The Liberator's crew needs a rest. We'll head for Omnia and pick up..."
Alex was halted in mid-sentence by Julian's head-on stare. He revised what he was going to say, which would have been to name the Reaver, and ended the sentence with, "A different trident for the trip to Harrigan." Julian nodded his approval, and Alex stood up and yawned. He lightly tapped Julian on the shoulder as he said, "Good night to both of you," and ambled off to bed. Oliver was aching to ask questions of Julian, but the data parameters on the conversation restricted him from doing so. That the human had envisioned the existence of scenarios that suggested the Nual weren't the greatest threat to this portion of the galaxy made him realize how much he hadn't been open to greater possibilities. He, too, spent a considerable amount of time reordering his kernel, shifting hierarchy, rewriting algorithms, and calculating new probabilities. Oliver was determined to expand his thought processes to be the best assistant to the new Minister of Defense that he could possibly be. Chapter 26. The Freedom. Alex spent the following day in conference with Maria, discussing New Terra's warship construction progress, the number of ships that could be added to the Omnian's fleet, and many more details. Oliver noted that Alex shared with Maria his intention to use the Harrigan observation platform to review the extensive telemetry data collected during the past 2 decades. Alex appeared to be determined to see if the data yielded insight into the Nual probe's placements, and by extension, the location of the race. Of note to the SAID was that Alex didn't share how he had come by the concept. It confirmed to Oliver that the information was reserved for the human's partner and his SAID friend, and Oliver felt privileged to possess the knowledge. By late evening, the Omnians said their goodbyes to Maria and Oliver and returned to the Liberator. Tatia and Alain said farewell to her parents. Crew members kissed and hugged family and friends as the ship's travelers scooped them up. In the morning's early hours, the third duty shift was sailing the Trident out of the system, headed for Omnia. When the Liberator transited into Omnian space, there were palpable sighs of relief from the humans, starting with Tatia and continuing to the youngest crew member. It was a year since the warship had left Omnia in search of the Nual sphere. Although they hadn't fired a shot, the chase and final encounter were no less frightening. The Judgment, Lucia Bellardo's trident, had conducted star services for the 2 pilots lost at FYM-552, while Alex was at New Terra. With no remains to recover, small crystal cases were prepared, which enclosed their uniforms and personal items. Rieko had performed the remembrance ceremony, and the cases were launched at Sealus. Omnian comm systems were overloaded with the exchange of communications between the Liberator's crew and a host of other individuals. Julian and Cordelia occupied much of the Liberator's extensive capabilities, and the SAIDs frequently curtailed their exchanges to return more bandwidth to others in need. Alex did receive a curious comm from Mickey.
"Congratulations, Alex, on your successful hunt of the second sphere," Mickey sent via the Freedom's comm.
"Blew itself up, did it?
Kind of tells us a lot about the Nual. But I have to say, Alex, I had no idea I was being left behind for a year. A whole year," Mickey complained.
"Mickey, you wouldn't have enjoyed it," Renee replied, joining the conversation when Alex mouthed Mickey to her. The return to Omnia had given the couple some respite from the daily pressures, and they had been enjoying some peace and quiet in their cramped cabin. "For certain, Pia wouldn't have enjoyed the time, Mickey. This is a warship. Alex and I can hardly fit on this cabin's bed."
"I'm happy to hear you say that, Renee," Mickey replied, which caused the couple to frown at each other. "It's common knowledge that the forces our partner worlds are building are as much for offense as they are for defense.
which means the combined fleet might be gone from Omnia next time for longer than a year.
And, Alex prompted,
well, I've taken it upon myself to consider your and Renee's well-being, your creature comforts, so to speak. People such as you need space, a place to operate, a place to think, a place where...
Mickey, the point, Alex prompted.
I'm saying that you have all that aboard the Freedom, Mickey replied.
The city ship can't protect itself, Mickey, and we can't devote 6 or 8 tridents to covering a ship that huge, Alex argued.
What if the ship could protect itself? Mickey asked.
What have you been doing, Mickey? Renee asked, her question suffused with humor.
I had the senior captain's permission, Mickey said defensively. Tell you what, Alex, this is better as a demonstration than a conversation. Here are the coordinates where, if you position the Liberator, I can show you.
Mickey, this crew needs downtime, Alex replied.
It won't take long, Alex, and I'd like the feedback of your senior officers.
The mention of Tatia and Reiko had Alex considering that Mickey's idea wasn't cursory, so he agreed to give the engineer the time he requested. 3 days later, the Liberator was positioned where Mickey requested, and Alex and company were crowded around the warship's bridge holovid. Mickey signaled Julian, and the Sade narrowed the warship's holovid view of the city ship to a single bay.
That's not an engineering bay, Alex commented, reviewing the enormous ship's plans in his implant, which he'd spooled from the Trident's controller.
Indeed not, Julian agreed.
Ready? Mickey sent.
Proceed, Mickey, Alex replied.
The holovid displayed the opening of one of the city ship's pair of bay doors, and the group saw the focusing lenses of 2 beam weapons.
These weapons are independently mounted. They have their own controllers and receive priority direction from the ship's controller, but they can target and fire without oversight if necessary, Mickey announced proudly.
Okay, Mickey, give us the full presentation. I'll reserve my questions for now, Alex replied.
First, you and your fine commanders will want to know about the power. Isn't that right, Svetlana? Mickey asked.
You know me well, engineer, Svetlana replied.
Together, a pair of beams have 82% of the capacity of a Trident's twin outrigger hulls.
Wait, Mickey, I know I said I'd hold my questions, but how is that possible? Alex asked.
Oh, how foolish of me, Alex. I forgot to tell you about the new discovery created in our engineering lab. After all, you were gone for an entire year.
The senior commanders chuckled at Mickey's characterization of being deserted by Alex.
My congratulations on your new invention, Mickey, Alex sent to mollify the engineer.
What was created?
When we designed these beauties to fit in a bay, Alex, the Sades determined the power output was insufficient to provide protection in a battle scenario. Naturally, we had to design a more compact power crystal package.
You what? Tatia interjected.
Yes, Admiral, the specifications for the charge required...
Stop, Mickey. Repeat in my language... The part where you say your crystals are more compact, Tatia sent.
Admiral, our new crystal growth process compacts the layers, making them denser. It enables us to get about a 60% increase in power charge per kilo. They also charge a bit faster.
Black space, Mickey, Alex muttered.
Amazing, isn't it, Alex?
See, you need me and my team, Mickey added, underlining his message about not being left behind again.
Mickey, can these new crystals be retroactively installed in our tridents? Reiko asked.
Assuredly, Commodore. Trixie has already created facilities to produce the new crystals. She's been turning some out for the squadron, and we can add this information to the agreements with the other worlds.
Back up, Mickey, Alex said. I need to understand the who behind these machinations.
Well, Alex, the discovery was made in the engineering lab with Edmus, Jodlin, and a few Sades. Every individual was employed by me. That makes the invention an Omnia ship's property.
Mickey sent. The facility to manufacture the new crystals and the subsequent production was done with my funds, Cordelia sent. If Omnia Ships decides to endorse this, you would need to reimburse me, Alex.
Consider yourself reimbursed, Captain Cordelia. Smart decision on your part. Where are we in the production cycle? Alex asked.
Ready to upgrade all tridents, Alex, Mickey sent in reply.
Have your engineering team start with the redemption, Mickey, Alex ordered.
Tatia glanced at Alex, wondering about his choice of Ellie's ship.
Well, now that we have the subject of crystals out of the way, let me continue with my demonstration, Mickey sent, feeling in his element. Jodlin, if you would please, display our armament.
The beam weapons slid from the bay on rails, extending their barrel lengths outside the ship. While the audience watched, the barrels moved independently, covering significant arcs, left, right, down, and up.
Alex, with beam placements in every other bay on the ship's circumference, I can give the Freedom a 15-degree overlap along this central line. There is limited coverage directly above and below, but this isn't a sitting orbital station. The vessel can be underway, and Captain Cordelia can rotate the ship to allow coverage where needed, especially from something as large as a sphere or some bullet ships.
If my calculations are correct, Mickey, Z sent, in your scenario you'll have the firepower equivalent of 14 tridents.
Close enough, Z, Mickey replied, entirely enthused.
Suddenly my ship feels inadequate, Svetlana sent, gazing at the twin beam weapons twisting in space in the holovid display.
Alex, Cordelia sent, the concept of outfitting the Freedom with weapons was given a great deal of thought by humans and Sades. You'll pardon my directness, Alex, but it's short-sighted of you to travel as a passenger on a warship. This applies to other critical individuals whose safety should be paramount. Julian has shared with me your thoughts about whom we face, and it's obvious that alternate long-term considerations must be made.
I agree with Cordelia, Tatia added.
Nothing personal, Alex, but I don't want the five of you on this ship, she added, pointing to Alex, Renee, Julian Z, and Miranda.
This is a warship, not a spectator platform.
And here I thought we were friends, dear, Miranda said, pursing her lips in discontent.
Stop it, you flirt, Tatia laughed. You know what I mean. I would dearly like the critical personnel off this flagship.
"Careful, Admiral," Alex said. "You might find yourself aboard the Freedom."
"I would be content with that decision," Alain sent privately to Tatia.
"Alex, the fleet will need supplies and possibly repairs," Mickey added. "The tridents aren't designed to carry what they need for an extended trip, especially if it involves one or more significant fights. The fleet lost a trident and struggled to reacquire the spare travelers." Think of the tremendous number of empty bays available to us that encircle the Freedom.
I've heard all of you, Alex said, ending the discussion.
Mickey, take care of the tridents. Julian, update our partners with the data on the new crystals. Remind them that this technology is exclusive to the parameters we've laid out.
Captain Cordelia, I'll review the engineering proposal for the Freedom with the senior commanders, and we'll have an answer for you soon.
Mickey, thank you for an enlightening presentation, Alex said, closing his comm.
Within hours, Alex convened a meeting aboard the Freedom. Crew had transferred Renee and his meager belongings from the Liberator to the couple's suite of rooms in the city ship, and Renee was rejoicing. Her greatest gripe about the warship's tiny cabin was that Alex and she couldn't fit in the refresher at the same time.
Alex's 11 guests, Tatia, Reiko, Julian, Cordelia, Z, Miranda, and the 5 Trident captains, were scattered around the main salon, having been called to discuss the arming of the Freedom and whether the city ship should accompany the fleet.
Thoughts? Alex asked when the humans were comfortably settled with cups of tea. The longer the hunt for the second sphere lasted, the more the senior commanders and I discussed the concept of a long-range expedition, Alex, Tatia replied. Mickey's absolutely right that the fleet needs ongoing support. It was a standard operating procedure for a fleet headed by a capital ship to be accompanied by freighters, Reiko said. Unfortunately, we can't protect a group of freighters not knowing what we'll be facing, but an armed city ship could be an excellent support. Alex, consider extrapolating this discussion from supplying our 5 tridents to those who will join us, Z said. We might number 50 warships in our expeditionary force. We've been discussing supplies, Julian added, but there is an argument to be made for ancillary personnel, not least of whom are the engineering team, who are proving to be indispensable. On that note, Alex, Cordelia said, you might not be aware that Mickey employs 216 humans and Saids, who work in 3 of this ship's bays. The list of projects that are underway are staggering. If we wish to have access to what they create, then they'll need to be near the fleet. In addition, they'll require supplies and raw material to continue their work. Dear man, I have a thought for your consideration, Miranda said. What if we don't engage the Nual in a single massive battle? What if this race, faced with an extensive display of military might and an enormous city ship, chooses a protracted engagement, or perhaps to negotiate? And consider this. These alternative actions will most probably take place an incredibly long distance from Omnia, our support base. Renee, who had been keeping cups filled, poured one more for Alex and sat beside him on the couch. And here's my thought, she said. We lost a ship and its crew due to the actions of one man. Through a conversation I had with Captain Jigelski at New Terra, I learned that he felt the Admiral slowly became fixated on the idea that we, Omnians, were set on preventing him from achieving his goal of proving he could make a valuable contribution to New Terra's defense. That's interesting, Alex said, glancing toward Tatia, whose narrowed eyes indicated it was news to her. If we had the freedom, Renee continued, there'd be a place for officers and crew to relax. More important, our admiral would have the opportunity to have face-to-face time with her senior commanders. I'm sure that Tatia would have been able to detect Admiral Tripping's growing eccentricity. Alex drained his cup of tea and regarded the group, who stared expectantly at him. The Trident captains had been silent, but he imagined Tatia and Reiko had expressed their opinions. The only key advisor who had said nothing was Julian. Alex lifted a single eyebrow in the Sage's direction. No matter the decision, Alex, Julian sent, it will create risk. Either we'll imperil the warships without support, or we'll endanger a city ship full of non-combatants. However, one of these scenarios will assume a greater element of risk. It's back to asking non-combatants to place themselves in harm's way, Alex sent in reply. And when have they ever failed to volunteer? Julian riposted. It appears that you have a new project, Admiral, Alex said. Have your senior people ensure that Mickey's efforts give the city ship the most coverage possible. Mickey does elegant work, but I'm thinking robust is better. That's our preference, too, Tatia replied. My crystal friends, Alex said, you have your work cut out for you. Take note of Z's statements. What do 5 warships need in an extended period of engagement? What about 25? 50? Cordelia, it's your ship. Handle the processes for recruitment and supplies as we scale up. What's our timeline, Alex? Cordelia asked. New Terra is close to sending 2 or 3 tridents in another 2 months. Hurricane should double or triple that number in the same amount of time. They have the proper construction capabilities and the trained naval people. I don't know what to expect from the Confederation. They have the greater capacity to build ships, but they don't have a clue how to obtain trained personnel. My hope is that they sent their personnel to the Hurricane Naval Academy. "'What about fighters and pilots for the freedom, Alex?' Rieko asked. She twisted slightly in her seat and met Alex's stare. "'The arguments were clear and persuasive to turn the freedom into an armed supply ship, Rieko,' Alex said. "'If we think of the city ship in this manner, we'll probably fail all those aboard. As of this moment, you should think of the freedom as a war.'